Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting installment of 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated podcast to all things comics, manga, and graphically illustrated whatchamagoos. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by Rob.
Hello.
But no Mick today.
No. He's somewhere.
Yep, he's off fighting for an alien planet in a war that's not his own, but he's made his cause.
Yes, he has.
He's fighting werewolves on the moon. There we go. That's a callback to an actual comic that I remember now.
It's funny you should mention werewolves, because Rob and I recorded the Geek Show on Tuesday, and one of the stories that I rejected from the show was about a woman who was arrested because she thought she was a vampire and she attacked a guy who she was convinced was a werewolf.
Goddamn. Goddamn, of all the ones to be right. Van Helsing starring Hugh Jackman. And
I'm just going to leave that there. So, yeah, this week we're doing our usual catch-up with all of the stuff.
Yeah, it's another, Jesus Christ, we've been sent so many comics, and oh God, it's nearly the end of the year. How are we going to read them all? Just shove them into a single show special.
Yes, it is. And I'm kicking things off this week with, since I've got two by Hiro Mishima, I will start off with Fairy Tale Lightning Gods, which is volume 3 of the spin-off series, which is by Kyota Shibano, and it's based on the Fairy Tale main series by Hiro Mishima.
Because remember, kids, bad manga and anime don't die, they just reincarnate to a spin-off series.
Yeah. Or they get a sequel, and then another sequel, and then... Well, no, we're going to go into the third option later on. You'll understand why.
Yeah. Also, I want to point out, when Rob says he has two Hiro Mishima things, it means he has two to do this week.
Yes.
You've got so much Hiro Mishima stuff, Rob.
Well, I have one volume that has eight Hiro Mishima stories, and I was going to do it today, but then I thought, no, that's too much Hiro Mishima for one day.
Yeah, God, that's a decology of Hiro Mishima.
Oh, God, Hiro Mishima's decalogue would be very different, wouldn't it?
But also, we've said his name too many times now. It doesn't sound like anything.
Oh, God, are we summoning him or something? Is he like Candyman or Beetlejuice?
No, I don't think he's like Beetlejuice.
So more like Candyman, then.
Yeah, he's just like Candyman. Oh, it didn't work.
It's because we only said it three times. It's five times, isn't it, for Candyman?
Oh, that's right. It's five for Candyman, but three for Beetlejuice.
Yes. But we said Candyman five times now.
God damn it, neither of them worked, Rob. What's even the point? Talk about your damn manga.
Okay, right. This is Fairy Tale Lightning Gods, and this is volume 3 of the spin-off series, which is, it's been quite a while since volume 2, which was Rhodonite, and volume 1, which was the Twin Dragons of Sabretooth. Sabretooth being a guild in the fairy tale world. And this one is set... This one's actually dealing with Laxus, who is... He's kind of a man-made dragon slayer. And it's set at a time when the fairy... In the main series, when the fairy tale guild has basically disbanded. And Laxus has gone to join... Laxus and his team have gone to join Blue Pegasus. Now, Blue Pegasus is, well, they're a guild who act more like, you know, those, the Japanese have those host clubs, you know, where...
You mean like the cafes where the dress-up is the cats?
No. The host clubs are where you have attractive men and they basically wear suits and the women go and spend a pleasant evening in the company of attractive men while having drinks and then go home by themselves.
Okay, that kind of club.
Yes. Right. So Blue Pegasus is a guild that's more along that and more along the lines of that. And the guild leader of Blue Pegasus, he has this saying, which, if I remember rightly from the anime version, goes, "Men," because he thinks he's very, very handsome and he's square jawed with a cleft chin, but he's tiny and his face is, well, just Google the leader of Blue Pegasus and you'll see his face and you'll understand why he's not what you'd consider attractive even in the manga sense, but he's convinced that he is attractive. So Laxus has joined Blue Pegasus and ostensibly he is playing a host. He doesn't know what to do because all he knows is fighting. And the rest of his team they've followed him, the trio of his best mates. And so, yeah. It turns out that the leader of Blue Pegasus has been kidnapped by the leader of another guild called the Red Princess, and the leader of that guild is convinced that she is the most beautiful woman in the world. And that
is the leader of Blue Pegasus the guy who looks like Arcade from the X-Men, 8 Chuck Norris?
Yes.
Sure.
Anyway, the...
sure, fairy tale.
The leader of Red Princess is Master Brianna, who is convinced that she is the most attractive woman in the world, and because she's the most attractive woman in the world, she's kidnapped Ichia, the leader of Blue Pegasus, because he is the only man who is handsome enough for her. So their first job is to rescue Ichia, which puts Laxus against the top four Red Princesses, whose combined might is said to even equal the 10 Wizard Saints, who are the most powerful wizards on the continent. And then there's a big fight in the way that fairy tale usually does fights. Yada, yada, yada. Moving on to a totally different story, which has Laxus and his team going to assist this young girl who wants to destroy this mirror, which apparently is preventing sunlight reaching the village. And it's a lot more complicated. It turns out that not everything is as it seems when some guy picks a fight with Laxus and stops him breaking the mirror. It's fairly linear, the stories in this. They're fairly bland. I'll be honest, of the three volumes that have been released so far, I have to say that I think Rhodonite is the one that has a bit more bite to it in the story about Gajeel, because that one is actually dealing with drugs and the effects of drugs, whereas this one is just basically Laxus trying to adapt to being in a new guild and remembering why he's friends with his friends and yada yada yada. So, you know, it's basically like it's fairy tale light, and because fairy tale is light enough as it is.
Yeah, this is like the aroma that is left in the room once fairy tale has left.
Or it's ironic you say that because Ichia, the leader of Blue Pegasus, his main power is parfum, which is a scent based magic.
God, fairy tale.
So anyway. This basically ends with people coming to get Laxus from Blue Pegasus because Fairy Tail has reformed again with Urza Scarlet as the guild leader. And I've got to say, okay, if you're a Fairy Tail fan, it's a nice little aside. It deals with what happened to Laxus when Fairy Tail broke up, in the same way that Rhodonite deals with what happened with Gajeel when Fairy Tail disbanded as a guild. So I suppose in that context, it's a nice little thing. It's a nice little addition to the main series. But as I said, Fairy Tale's a light enough story as it is. So when you have Fairy Tale light, it is quite literally air. So good attempt at doing a side story based on the main story, but lacks substance.
Fairy Tale.
Although I will give it one plus point, right? It's nowhere near the level of Fairy Tale when it comes to the fan service.
Oh, that's something at least then.
Yeah. Even with the four Red Princesses, you'd think that fighting Laxus, okay, clothes are going to get ripped off, yada, 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 doesn't happen. So, you know, that was a nice thing to see.
Yeah, I think of all the things that Fairy Tale could chuck out of this hot air balloon to lighten the load even further, the fan service is definitely what I would pick.
Yep, I'm with you on that one, because I really don't see the point of it. It serves no purpose. It doesn't add anything to the story.
It serves something, all right.
Yeah, we won't go there.
Shakespeare's angrily at certain demographics.
In the words of Itcher, men!
They're so gross, Rob.
So, over to you, Andrew.
Yes. Enough of your magic teens. It's time to talk about my magic teens.
Your teens were magical? This
is my magic teen who is called Magic.
Okay. As
I have been reading The New Mutants, Dead Souls.
All right.
So this is a fairly recent miniseries from Marvel, which is written by Matthew Rosenberg, with art by Adam Gorham and colours by Michael Garland and Andrew Crosley and letters by Clayton Cowles.
Okay.
So, this follows, at least some of the New Mutants, the former sort of student body of the Xavier Institute. One of their number, Karma, a.k.a. Sean something. She is not my favourite New Mutant, and I do not know all that much about Karma. Except that it's a real bitch sometimes.
Okay.
Anyway, she has now set up her own company and has hired a bunch of the old New Mutants to travel around the world investigating all the weird sort of magic aspects of the Marvel Universe. But also maybe they're on a super secret mission that no one really knows the true nature of.
Okay.
So on the team, as we said earlier, we've got Magic, Ilyana Rasputin, Colossus's sister.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. I always thought her code name was probably the lamest of all of them.
I mean, I don't know. They have some bad code names.
Yeah, Eye Boy isn't really a great name for somebody who's basically eyes.
He is a boy covered in eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's descriptive, but I mean, Ilya Rasputin, just, you know, were all the good magic-related names taken?
To be fair, what I do find weird is that she calls herself Magic when she also has, like, a much more metal-as-hell name, which is the Dark Child.
See, I would have just called her Dark Child, but maybe that's already taken.
And yes, kids, that is Child, spelled C-H-Y-L-D-E.
Yeah, I remember that, which I always thought was a much better name.
Because it's hella metal.
Yep.
So she's leading the team even. Her thing is, I think her actual mutant power is like teleportation.
That's not magic. But
that's separate from the actual magic that she can do, which also includes turning her soul into a big-ass sword. She's difficult to explain, and I like that the book even, because they do the typical Marvel thing, kind of introducing each character with, like, their description boxes. And Magic's is Ilyana Rasputin, team leader, goth mutant teleporter, witch, sometimes demon queen of limbo. And then another box, Magic also has a magical sword. She's kind of hard to explain.
So she has a soul that can turn into a sword.
Yeah, well, the sword is like the embodiment of her soul that she keeps in her body and then pulls out and decapitates people with.
So what happens if she fights somebody and her sword breaks? Because there is a type of weapon called a sword breaker.
She loses her soul, I guess. Which, I mean, look, to be honest, it's happened before and it hasn't slowed her down. So anyway, she is the team leader. And with that is her fellow original New Mutant, Wolfsbane, Rain Sinclair. She turns into a wolf. She's very easy to explain. Then we also have later New Mutant editions Richter, a.k.a. Julio Richter.
Yeah.
He makes earthquakes and is an example of one of my favourite dumb comic book things, which is when someone conveniently has a last name, they, like, directly translate to their powers.
Okay.
Then we also have one of my favourites, because she was in Next Wave, Boom Boom's on the team. Need to be more excited about Boom Boom, Bob.
Is this Boom Boom who throws those little balls around that go boom and boom and boom?
Yep, she blows things up. I think there's one really great line in the book that explains what she does. I will just try and find it.
Okay.
Yeah, she basically is like yelling at Magic, what are we going to do? And she's just, what do you think we should do? I don't know, I just blow things up. Magic says, and you don't even do that well.
This is true. Boom Boom isn't my first choice of explosives expert.
I mean, it doesn't help that she spends about a good 70% of this series drunk off her ass.
Yeah. What was that? Was it it was X-Men Evolution, wasn't it? The cartoon series.
Oh, yeah, she was in that. She was like one of the kids.
Yeah. See, I thought that pretty much encapsulated Boom Boom, her depiction in that cartoon series.
I mean, basically, Boom Boom is the worst friend you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why I love her. Anyway, and then rounding off the team, and hey, speaking of people with really bad code names, it's Strong Guy.
Oh, it's Guido. I love him.
Yeah, Guido is great, because he's a guy who is strong.
Yes.
And he's called Strong Guy.
He was part of X-Factor, wasn't he?
He was indeed.
And I love the fact that, have you ever seen him drinking tea? It's just the best image.
It is, because like, he has a tiny teacup. And to explain for anyone who does not know who Strong Guy is, he's basically... How do you even describe the top heavy majesty that is Strong Guy?
I have always described him as a pinkish Urbane Hulk.
Yeah, but also imagine, you know, Superman's shield symbol thing that he has?
Yeah.
That but a person.
Or imagine if the Hulk was kind of a Victorian gentleman.
Or specifically like a New Jersey, a Guido.
Yeah.
Because also, he has a Guido, and his name is Guido.
Yes, it is.
God, Strong Guy's so dumb, and I love him.
He was always my favourite member of X Factor.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I've kind of... This is all hinted at what I really like about this series, is that it's just a bunch of dumb characters that I really love just running around having adventures. Like, the plot itself is fairly simple, because it's just they've got, like, go to a place and get a thing or stop a thing from happening. But it's just, like, it's all the fun banter and interactions. Like, even, because the fourth issue, I believe, it involves them going to a funeral, not to spoil too much. And that actually gets quite deep. And so it does a bit of sort of exploring what makes all these characters tick, which I really appreciate as well.
Cool.
So I think on the... Well, I guess the complaints aren't necessarily negatives. It's more just pointing out this is definitely a book for X fans, because lots of it sort of just assumes your knowledge of quite in-depth, sort of deep-cut storylines. Like the fact that at one point Strong Guy lost his soul and then became King of Hell, and also killed Wolfsbane's kid, who was an evil wolf guy. But it's okay, he's got his soul back now.
Okay. Hang on. So, Strong Guy became King of Hell. What happened to Mephisto? Yeah.
He got made not King of Hell for a while.
Is there something to do with Hulk? Because I remember during the 90s they had that Hulk story which culminated in the wedding of Rick Jones and What's-Her-Face.
No, this is 2010s, maybe?
Okay, because during that wedding bit, there was the whole bit where Mephisto turns up because he used to have What's Her Face's soul, and then Hulk basically picked a fight with him, and Mephisto's like, oh yeah, my plan is going to come to fruition. I will have Hulk on my side soon.
Basically, you can only relate to the world through 90s Hulk.
90s Hulk was the worst and also the best Hulk.
Actually, yeah, because I guess I can't make fun, because 90s Hulk is a good way to relate to the world, because it was just everything at once.
Yes, it was.
God, that series was so weird. You're throwing me off because now I'm remembering 90s Hulk. I'm just kind of shaking my head in confusion, as I'm wont to do. So but I think it's cool because it is catering to a very specific section of the fan base, which like is a sizable portion of these X fans, like are really into all this deep cut continuity, like fans of these ridiculous and obscure characters. Like, boy, how you just mentioned the fact that Richter is like in a relationship with Shatterstar, you know, that weird alien dude who was in Deadpool 2 for a little bit and flew into a helicopter.
And whose name I'm refusing to chuckle over.
Yeah. He has a fan base. He has such a big fan base of fans who are like very, very passionate about that character.
Just don't mention the fan base to me.
I have to, Rob, because I have a shocking confession to make.
Are you a fan?
I'm one of them now.
Oh, God.
It's just, I think it's mainly one scene where Karma's like trying to talk to Richter about stuff. I think she's trying to track down magic because she's briefly disappeared. That's just like her yelling, I know you are covering for her. I don't know what you're up to, but when I find out, .. I'd tell Shatterstar to put some damn clothes on. And he's just standing there in the background wearing nothing but an apron. His response is just a flat no.
See, I like Shatterstar as a character. It's just his name.
Yes, basically, for people who aren't 5 years old, he's a pretty bad character. It's actually got a mini series out at the moment. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard. I've been meaning to read it.
It has. Do you know the Captain America villain, the Flag Smasher?
Yes, it was another name I can't take seriously.
Oh, you think that's bad. Shatterstar has an alternate reality version of him. He's a dog called the Pug Smasher.
Just stop.
I can't stop. Comics are too weird and I love it.
Oh.
Yeah. But also the kind of weird thing that they've done with this series is it ends on like a really big cliffhanger. And I think the X-Men comics, they're kind of taking a bit of a different approach to what Marvel's been doing recently, in that it's not really standalone stuff. It's all kind of tying together into one big tapestry. They're making it a bit more serialized, which really, I'm interested to see where they're going with that. But I think I would have liked something a bit more, because it ends with just the end question mark. Whereas I would have preferred something more along the lines of this story will continue in this book, just because I've been burned before, Rob, with comics going, oh, we set up a big plot line for the future and we're never going to deliver on it.
Yeah, I've been burned by that a lot as well, especially by Marvel.
Especially by the X-Men.
Yeah.
Anyway, New Mutants Dead Souls. It's very good. I had a lot of fun with it.
Excellent.
Also, to be fair, Magic is one of my favourites, along with like Boom Boom and Strong Guy, so I'm happy.
That's fair enough. Plenty to be happy about there. Right, so back to me then.
Back to you.
I've got a while ago I did a graphic novel from Dark Horse and Burger Books called Incognito, which is by Matt Johnson and Warren Place, and I said it was very, very good, if you remember.
And then I read it, and I agreed it was very, very good.
Well, I also have now Incognito Renaissance, which is kind of a prequel to Incognito. And if you remember, the reporter from Incognito is called Zane Pinchbeck, who works for, if I remember rightly, the New York Cub, which is a black newspaper. And because he has lighter skin than the usual African American, he can pass as a tanned white guy. And this is set during the I think it's the 1920s, because there's characters in here doing the Charleston and stuff like that. And so he basically, in the first graphic novel, he was going to a small town to basically report on racial crime and the Ku Klux Klan. And is it the Ku Klux Klan or the Ku Klux Klan?
The Ku?
I think it's the
Ku. I don't know. I think they sound equally ridiculous.
Yeah, let's just call them Triple K, right? So anyway, this is actually set at a time before he became Incognito, right? And this is about the first story that he published as Incognito, which was the story about a black author who allegedly committed suicide, but Zane and his friend were there on the night of the party. Zane spoke to this man called Xavier, and he didn't seem like the suicidal type at the time. It turns out that there is there's a murder happened, but because it was a black man who was murdered, an African-American who was murdered, the police at the time just treated it as a suicide. Nobody wanted to look into it anymore, except for a white woman who was close to the late Xavier. And so Zane is trying to trace this white woman down, only to find that there's a twist in that tale as well. And so he is putting together the pieces through several chapters and comes out with a conclusion, which I was actually surprised by. It's basically a murder mystery with a reporter, an aspiring young reporter, being the actual detective in the murder mystery. There is an element of tragedy about it, because this is something that, it's got that element of plausibility about it, because it's set during that time, and we all know that horrible things did happen even then, especially to people of colour in America.
Yeah, it's basically a time when you read it and you think, no, these characters are cartoonishly racist, but actually, no, that's accurate.
Yeah. And we can say that's accurate because we got the benefit of hindsight. But at the time, nobody really knew any better. But that's not reason to forgive. I think that one...
Don't be racist, guys. It's not that hard.
Yeah. I kind of adore the Incognito series, partly because I've been on the receiving end of racism while I was growing up. Nothing to the level that's shown in these graphic novels, and nothing to the level that was around at the time that these graphic novels are set in, but I have been on the receiving end. So for me, this strikes a little bit of a chord, but nowhere near to the same extent it would strike a chord with African-Americans, you know?
I think it's probably a very timely series as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's a very timely series. I mean, this originally came out, the Incognito originally came out around 2008, if I remember rightly, and it was out on Vertigo, but now it's been re-released by the Dark Horse imprint, Burger Books. And I've got to say, when it originally came out, it caused a bit of a stir. It caused some controversy when it came out.
Oh, yeah. God. I was just thinking 2008 for that to come out is quite...
Yeah.
That's quite cutting edge.
Yep. But you've got so many people singing its praises, and I am going to join that cacophony of praise because it is very, very good. You'd think with something like this, the murder mystery aspect would get lost in the whole aspect of race relations, but it doesn't. It keeps them running side by side, but they both complement each other.
Oh yeah, I think that's also a thing we should point out, that not only are these like incredibly relevant and important, also just like really well written mystery stories.
Yeah, absolutely. So Incognito Renaissance, I highly recommend. It's strange. I think the publishing order is actually correct, because if you read the first Incognito, that gets you into the whole character of Zane Pinchbeck and the job he's doing. And then this one tells you the story of how he became that person, which is a nice way of going about it.
Yeah, it is. I can dig it.
So, yeah. I've got to say hats off again to Matt Johnson and Warren Police for telling a very good story and a very relevant story. You know, I mean, right on the first page, this is how relevant this graphic novel is, right? On the very first page, as Zane Pinchbeck is walking down the street, you know, they're going to this party. It's a reporter and his friend, and his friend says, "Why don't you trust me? Look out, police." And as they walk by, officer, the fact that one of them has had to say, "Look out, police."
Yeah, it's still depressingly relevant to today.
Yep. So, I've got nothing else to say about Incognito. It's, you know, if you want a good graphic novel that's relevant, and that is telling a story about older times, but is kind of ahead of its time as well, then this is the one.
Okay, look, I have nowhere to segue to this now, but
sorry,
I'm going to talk about a dumb Avengers comic.
That's all right. Mine was kind of heavy, so a dumb Avengers comic is it lightens the mood.
Yeah, well, we are going to lighten it. So I've been reading The Avengers, The Final Host, which collects the first six issues of the current Avengers series, as well as the free comic book day issue.
All right.
So it is written by Jason Aaron, with art by Ed McGuinness and Paco Medina for the main series, and Sarah Pacelli for the free comic book day book, with ink by Mark Morales, Jay Leiston, Juan Lasco, Carl Story, and Elisabetta D'Amico, with colours by David Curiel and Justin Ponza, and letters by VC's Corey Petit. Okay, so it's the Avengers. They're back together. You've got your Captain America. You've got your Iron Man. You've got the Thor. You've got Hulk, but it's not that Hulk. It's She-Hulk, but she's Hulk now. You've got Captain Marvel. You've got Black Panther. And then you've got Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider. And they've all come together because the Celestials are attacking Earth. So this again? Whole thing, it ties back into Marvel Legacy from I think what was like the start of last year, you know, with those Avengers like 1 million BC. Do you remember them, Bob?
Yeah.
They were a thing.
It's nice to see we have the same opinion about them.
Look, maybe I'd like them, Jason, but just show me goddamn Ghost Rider of 1 million BC on his goddamn woolly mammoth.
No, his fiery woolly mammoth.
Yes, his fiery skeletal woolly mammoth.
See, I'd pay good money to read that.
So would I. But you keep teasing me, Jason. You keep teasing me and not showing it. It's not fair. I don't like it.
Here's a question, right? In the Marvel Universe, this is just a slight aside. It's about Ghost Rider. In the Marvel Universe, hell and places like that are basically eternal places, aren't they?
Yep.
But wasn't it kind of, I can't remember if it's still canon in the Marvel Universe, that the dinosaurs actually evolved intelligence and then buggered off into space?
I don't know. Look, according to this, what's Marvel canon now is that all life on Earth grew out of a celestial's vomit.
Yeah, but dinosaurs are still there, because I wanted my T-Rex Ghost Rider.
I think there might have been a T-Rex Ghost Rider at some point, probably.
And if not, there should be.
Or maybe they had a Ghost Rider who did have a pet T-Rex, but then he never rode it.
Oh no, it wouldn't be Ghost Rider, it'd be Ghost Raptor.
Oh my God. Rob.
I know. Sorry.
So anyway, the Avengers of 1 million BC, they killed the sixth Celestial and like buried it under the Earth. Then the rest of the Celestial came and kind of quarantined Earth or something and sort of studied it as life grew up around it. You know, like what they've kind of established in Marvel Comics of yore. But now, basically, Earth is too dangerous and we're at risk of kind of spreading the Celestial disease back into the cosmos. So the final host of Celestials have come to destroy the Earth, but also they may be infected with the space disease too.
So Earth is basically like a giant Petri dish.
Yeah, basically. Oh. I think the idea is the Celestials wanted to see what would happen, but now that there's a risk of an outbreak, they need to shut the experiment down.
Sorry, who wrote this again?
Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron basically nicked the story from Treehouse of Horror, didn't he?
I don't know. I think it's probably not a...
No, do you remember that Treehouse of Horror where Lisa has the science experiment and it becomes like an entire world and they consider her to be God and everything?
Nope, because as I've said on numerous times, I haven't really watched The Simpsons.
Damn, my reference fell on deaf ears.
It did indeed. Which, I mean, hasn't stopped you in the past and I doubt will stop you in the future.
No, I refuse to be stopped.
Do you know who should have been stopped in the past?
Who?
Jason Aaron, before I could write a really boring Avengers series. Oh, also, by the way, Loki's the one who summoned the final host.
Isn't that always Loki?
Yeah, of course it's always Loki, because he's the Avengers' first villain. And God, it sucks, because this series literally starts with, like, Tony Stark, Steve Rogers, and Thor sitting around a table, and Steve Rogers saying, like, we need to get the Avengers back together. And Tony just being like, no, maybe we should let some new people do it. I bet they could do some new and exciting and interesting things. And then Steve being all, nope, it's got to be us. It's got to be the good old Avengers. And I feel like the point is you're supposed to sympathize with Steve, but I don't. I want new exciting Avengers. I don't want just the same old garbage recycled again.
The same old Captain, oh, me back, oh, me knees, America.
Yeah, because it is, because it's just, it's a thought I first had when I saw this lineup and has carried through this book of just, it's the most blandly the Avengers lineup you could have. There's no real interesting team dynamics. Oh, except Thor and She-Hulk want to smush now, I guess.
Thor and She-Hulk?
Yeah, get it. Because, like, Thor and the Hulk want to fight each other, but now Thor and the Hulk want to fight each other in a different way.
Oh, they want to do something, yeah. I'm not even going to go there.
He's flipped it all on its head, Rob.
He hasn't, though. He's just sending She-Hulk back to what she was during the late 80s and 90s.
Yeah, that is like Marvel Comics 101. When in doubt, just have She-Hulk get jiggy with someone.
Yeah.
That's a plot. That'll do. And yeah, it's just... Celestials are boring, Rob.
Of course they are.
They're just big space robots.
Didn't Neil Gaiman do a Marvel graphic novel or a Marvel series called Celestials?
No, that's the Eternals.
Oh, was that Eternals?
Oh, by the way, they're dead now.
Oh, okay.
Which, literally, they get killed, like, off-panel, and the Avengers find their bodies, which, it's just a sucky way of doing things in comics to just go, like, these characters are dead now. It's high stakes.
Can it not be high stakes just for once? Can it be, like, really, really obscenely low stakes?
I mean, that might be more interesting.
You know, it's like the earth will die if we spill this cup of tea.
It would be more interesting than, oh no, the space robots are doing a bad, we've got to punch them lots so that they stop doing the bad.
Well, it would just be a matter of waiting until someone realises, just drink the damn tea.
Ghost Rider possesses a Celestial at one point, that's pretty cool. But like, if that is... I mean, also, I think the main problem is if this had been like maybe a 3-issue arc, it would have been a fair enough way to kick off the series. But it's very obviously like, what's weird because it's been simultaneously stretched out to fit into 6 issues.
Mm.
But also feels like it's been like super trimmed down. Because like, it's kind of, you know, the Celestials, the gods, and like, it's revealing the secret history of Earth and tying together all these things that have been in the running for a long time.
Mm.
And it feels like something that was maybe supposed to be like a big event and then got kind of pared down to just a really simple Avengers got to punch these bad guys story. It's also weird because they do a lot of setting up for like some of the Avengers BC to be back. Because like you had those 1 million BC Avengers that was like Odin. It was obviously being like replaced by Thor. You had Ghost Rider then, you've got a Ghost Rider now. You had Agamotto and Black Panther, who were like the Doctor Strange and Black Panther of their day. But then like you also had Phoenix, Starband, and Iron Fist, who then just don't show up in, well, barely show up in the story at all. Like Starband is dead.
Yeah.
Phoenix gets like very briefly mentioned, and Iron Fist shows up in one panel punching an alien bug monster. Just it needed to be either less or more.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, like, you could have had this big story where the Avengers and the Eternals team up. And maybe if you wanted to kill the Eternals at the end of that, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
But don't just jank them all off panel. I mean, I don't even like the Eternals, and I'm kind of mad about that.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, the art's nice, though.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it.
Boring Avengers is over and done with.
It is indeed. Let's move on to something more interesting.
Actually, that's a good segue, because it is more interesting, a lot more interesting, especially
to me. Okay, good. I gambled and it paid off.
Right, so for me, I have Yukito Kishiro's Battle Angel Alita, Holy Night and Other Stories, and I have never read this before, right? I have read all of Battle Angel Alita, or Ganmu, or Gunm, as it's known, which basically means Gun Dream. I've read all of Battle Angel Alita Last Orders, but I've never read this. And this is actually 4 short stories that Yukito Kishiro wrote. Is it 3 or 4? I can't remember. It's 3 or 4 short stories that Yukito Kishiro wrote. And they're actually interesting additions to the main series now. In the main series, obviously, it starts off with the Dr. Ido finding Alita in the scrapyard, and Alita being given the name Alita, but it actually explains where the name Alita came from in the first place, and it also explains how Ido got to be such a good doctor, such a good cyber doctor, where his skills came from, and how he, you know, how he found his philosophy as a hunter warrior. And that's all in the first story, which is Holy Night, which is 3 chapters long, and tells the story of Ido, who found an amnesiac young lady in the sewer being attacked by a giant robot. He drives the robot off and he calls the girl Carol. And the girl and him, they're basically, you know, they're getting closer and closer. He doesn't realize what's going, you know, the truth of things until much later on. And it is tragic, the story of Dr. Ido, but it's kind of uplifting when you know what he goes on to do and who he goes on to help, and the story of Battle Angel Alita and how that continues on through the sequel of Last Orders as well. So that's the first story, and then this goes on to the second story, which is sometimes people call things by names that, you know, at the time they make sense, and when you look at the story, it makes sense, but it also makes you chuckle at the name. And the second story is called Sonic Finger. I heard that snigger.
You're supposed to be the immature one, not me.
I heard that snigger in the background.
Boy, I can't wait till Doctor Who's brave enough to do that storyline. Come on, Drop your trousers. I need to investigate you with my sonic finger.
I'm going to probe with my sonic finger. Oh. Anyway, Sonic Finger is about a guy who has been going around taking out various fighters. Alita being an instructor. She's a fighting instructor. She's a hunter warrior. And the style of combat that she uses is ancient Martian Panzerkunst. And
sure.
Yeah. What I like about about Yukito Kishiro's work, what I like in particular about it, is that even though Alita has full body cyberization, except for like her brain, you know, the rest of her is basically a cybernetic body. But even with that, and even though it's like a highly advanced cybernetic body, she still trains like a normal human being. You know, does that, and that's what I like, is the mundanity of the fact that she still does things like balance exercises, she still does push-ups and sit-ups and things like that. Things that a normal human being would do.
No, see, how a normal human being trains is they wake up and they think, oh, I should go for a run, but it's quite chilly out. Maybe just another 10 minutes in bed.
All right, a normal human athlete then.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Okay, so anyway... Sonic Finger takes a pot shot at her on purpose, doesn't try and kill her. Just...
Oh, God, it was called Sonic Finger.
Yeah, the guy is called Sonic Finger, and his weapon is the Sonic Finger. He fires these balls. I can't remember if they're steel balls or... it's a 10 millimeter ball bearing, and he basically uses it, and he's kind of an assassin, kind of a fighter type thing. And Alita basically sends him a letter of challenge to take him on, and I'm going to leave it at that. It's a story that I didn't really understand. I kind of got the point that there was, you know, that was trying to be made, but it still left a lot of unanswered questions. The main one being, who is this Sonic Finger? What was the story behind him? Why did he go and fight Alita in the first place?
Did he have the touch?
He did, and he did have the power as well. The next story is a rather sweet and tragic story about a Deckman. Now, a Deckman is, in the world of Battle Angel Alita, a Deckman is basically a robot that basically goes around doing odd jobs. It's been programmed to do all sorts of odd jobs. It's a special cyborg unit installed to undertake a variety of tasks at the factory. It uses an inorganic brain as part of its processor, but all human desires and will have been removed. It's believed that its personality is there for the purpose of facilitating human interaction. And it's semi-autonomous, but connected to the network, functioning as an end terminal for the central cyber brain. Deckmen can travel through linear tubes, interfacing with surrounding system devices for greater expediency. And this one tells the story of a particular Deckman who is out in the desert and... is trying to help some guy with, you know, who's thirsty, who's been involved in a massive accident, and he feeds him some liquid that he got from a car, but it's actually gasoline, not water. So the Deckman goes to find water, and it's using this helmet that, this kind of soldier's helmet, like a World War One helmet, and it's traveling across deserts and canyons and things like that, but there's something following it. And, you know, you don't know really why it's being followed, but it ends up at the sea where there's this really lovely scene of the Deckman trying to get some seawater, but then the sea starts coming back in, you know, as the waves do. So the Deckman quickly moves away from the water, and then you can just imagine that scene repeating itself. And then it gets assaulted by a bunch of kids, and it has a wonderful day at the seaside. And then there's this really nice two-page spread of just the silhouette of the Deckman against the sun setting over the ocean. And then things happen. The third story, Barjack Rhapsody, is all about the Barjack group, who were led by Master Den. And it's about Koyomi, who was one of the survivors of the Barjack group. She's trying to find her way in the world as a photojournalist. But part of her wants the Barjack group to return. So when... her convoy is attacked by what looks like Master Den. She's on the hunt trying to find what the hell's going on. And that leads her to what could possibly be the revival of the Barjack group or not. It leaves it open-ended, and I like the fact that it leaves it open-ended. There are some things that are added on to this. There is, there is a little kind of essay from Yukito Kishiro about the state of his health and about how he was working while he was creating the first Battle Angel Alita series, which is interesting. It's information that I knew already, but with the movie coming out and with new people getting into Battle Angel Alita, this is stuff that would be new to them. You know, there's some background info on Bajack Rhapsody and various other things, and then there's a really nice color picture of Alita at the end with like loads of characters kind of behind her. It's a really nice hardback volume, and I've got to say I kind of love this, but then again I'm a massive Battle Angel Alita fan, so this is perfect for me.
Yeah, probably not surprising that you love it then.
I'm a sci-fi nerd, you know this. I like my sci-fi more than I like food.
That's some impressive dedication.
Well, let's put it this way. When I was growing up, I used to watch Star Trek, and I'd have food in front of me, and I would be so enthralled with Star Trek that my mum would take the plate away, and then by the time I'd noticed, I'd look down and go, where's my food?
And that's why you starved to death.
Well, obviously, she didn't keep the food. She was just trying to make a point, but it happened so many times.
Did you try just not eating food when Star Trek was on?
Yeah, it kind of ended up that way. Anyway, yeah, so Battle Angel Alita, Holy Night and Other Stories. That's out from Kodansha Comics. Really nice hardback volume. And if you're a fan of Battle Angel Alita, you owe it to yourself to get this.
Fair enough. And hey, speaking of hardback manga books.
Yeah?
Well, not from Kodansha. This one is from Fantagraphics.
Oh?
I have been reading Shintaro Keigo's Dementia 21.
Oh, is this the one about the lass who's looking after the old folks?
Yep, this is about Yuki Sakai, who is kind of the top home assistant at Green Net Private Elderly Care. But unfortunately for her, one of the other assistants is sleeping with like the manager of the company, and so she kind of manipulates him into giving Yuki all the problem jobs in an attempt to lower her score. And it starts off nice enough. Yuki's sent to a house which has a reputation for being haunted. Kind of all the assistants who have gone there before have died in mysterious accidents. But then she finds out that actually it's no ghost. It's actually the old woman who lives there pretending to be a ghost because she wants a vendetta against home assistants since her husband ran off with one.
Ah, right.
And yeah, that's all. That's all well and good. It ends with Yuki kind of basically surviving because the old lady's heart gives out, and so she withholds her heart medication until the old lady gives her a good score. And boy, if you thought that was how black the comedy is going to get, that's the tip of the iceberg. Because from chapter 2 onwards, this book goes completely bananas.
See, you say that, but I watched and absolutely loved Katsuhiro Otomo's Rugen Z, which is one of the blackest comedies I've seen that involves elderly people.
Okay, well, let's see how this shapes up. So in the second story, Yuki has to take care of a pair of identical triplets who all live together, but she kind of does that and then comes back the next day. Well, she finds that there's only 6 people there, and then 9, and then 12, and just exponentially more and more. And I just want to point out the art in this bit, which I really like, because it's kind of all the beds are laid out with grids. And it's sort of, you see these time-lapse pictures of Yuki kind of by each bedside, and each picture is kind of similar, but like slightly different to show how she like copes with the various different needs of each person. Like for some people, she'd be lying them on their back, others on their side. Some she's given a bath, some she's feeding soup, and that's fun. So anyway, more and more old people get dumped until there's literally just like piles of old people in the corner, like with legs shoved through screens and people just one on top of each other. And it turns out basically all the locals have found out that this is the house where they can just dump their old people to get cared for free.
Oh, God.
And it ends with Yuki basically rallying all the old people, you know, saying, you know, doesn't it bother you how ungrateful your own family are? And they They do. They get mad. And of course, we all know what happens when old people get mad.
Slow things.
Yes, that's right. What?
Slow things happen.
Yeah, I guess they are quite slow. But it doesn't really matter what speed you are. When you merge into like a 6-story tall golem made out of old people.
Now you're getting the Rugen Zed part.
Yeah. Welcome to Dementia 21. This is what kind of book it is. It's like, then you get the next chapter where she's looking after an old woman who's starting to forget things in her senility. Fortunately, she's also an incredibly powerful telepath, and as soon as she forgets something, they explode out of existence.
Ouch.
Yep. So she's basically surrounded by family, like desperately trying to make a good impression so that they won't be wiped out of reality.
Can you imagine if Infinity War ended like that?
I mean, it is basically Infinity War. So then the story after that is about sentient dentures.
Sorry, I don't know why I find that funny, but I do.
It's no laughing matter, Rob. They want to take over the world by, like, invading people's mouths and replacing all your real teeth.
Isn't that... Oh, God, no, the reference is going to fly past you again.
It's actually super creepy because, like, everyone walks around with these huge manic grins and then, like, vomit teeth into other people's mouths. That one was one of my... Oh. And see, turns out the teeth are replicating by, like, converting organic matter into more teeth.
Wasn't there a Doctor Who story like that as well?
Yeah, I don't think in that Doctor Who story there was a man whose eyes get turned into more teeth.
No, that sounds more like a Junji Ito thing.
Yeah, that story is, like, the most Junji Ito. Like, the ending's just horrifying. Like, it's basically Yuki talking to the police, but, like, she turns away, and you just see, like, all the police burst out into the same, like, manic grins.
So how come she didn't get taken over?
Because she's smarter than the average bear.
Also, if they take over everybody, who's going to clean them?
That's a good question. But yeah, no, to be honest, a lot of these stories don't really have much continuity between them. They're more like just one and done. Then there's the story of Red Men, who is Japan's premier superhero and is like basically one of those, you know, superheroes who can get real big. But she's stuck being real big. So Yuki has to like wash him down with a fire truck and like hold his toothbrush in a crane.
This, remember you did that 3-story?
Yeah, it's basically 3-story, but what if he got old and ended up just, like, meeting all his villains for tea?
Oh, God. See, this sounds bizarre, and I kind of love the sound of it.
Oh, this might be, like, one of my new favourite manga. Oh, and another one you get sent to a home assistant boot camp. Which is literal boot camp. Like, she has to practice carrying ill, like, mannequins through the jungle, avoiding tigers and minefields. And it ends with Yuki turning into, like, a crazed home help zombie. It's, like, pinning people down and putting them in nappies and, like, wrapping them up warm. And basically ends with it, like, eliminating all war because everyone's just too comfy to fight.
who made this?
It is Shintaro Keigo.
Oh, I'm going to have to check this out. This sounds amazing.
Oh, there's Old Person Battle Royale. Like, there's this really exclusive retirement home that basically, you know, you live in luxury for completely free, but the catch is all the old people get dumped on an island and have to fight it out to see who wins the place. Oh, but also, it turns out it's all a con. It's actually to build a fighting force of, like, the world's most elite elderly people so that they can go into space and fight the elderly people of, like, Red Man's archenemy.
Wow.
Oh, and I think, like, possibly the darkest one that was so good. It's basically Yuki has to help an old man out. He's, like, kind of too old to drive, but still insists on doing it. But turns out Japan's passed new driving laws. And basically it starts off, they have to go on a specific road for old people.
Yeah.
But oh no, Rob, they keep nearly dying because all the other drivers are having heart attacks and crashing into them. So they try to escape and they go through like a bunch of different roads. So there's one road specifically for drunk drivers. And like they get pulled over and breathalyzed and chastised because they're under the limit. Like you need to be this drunk to drive. There's a hearses only road, VIPs only road, full of limos, a moving house road, which is literally a bunch of homes on the backs of trucks, and of course, toxic waste road.
Okay.
They keep escaping, trying to, you know, get through, and eventually they wind up on just a road that seems okay, but fairly gridlocked, until they look and they see the end of the road is just a sheer drop. Because, surprise, it's a suicides-only road. It's just a bunch of people just driving to, like, a massive drop at the end. Like basically like you would make a roller coaster tycoon.
This sounds adorable.
Oh, this is absolutely fantastic. Like, it's absolutely pitch black, but just so funny. So I could not recommend this series more than I am now. Like, this is definitely, like, top 10, possibly even top 5. It's just, it absolutely gets my sense of humor, which is super dark, but also really bizarre. Oh, also, it turns out old person wrinkles, yeah, they're actually all connected by ham space.
Okay.
And basically, Yuki gets sucked into kind of this whole, like, slimy underworld of people robbing back. Yeah, it's like some woman's daughter-in-law decides to start robbing places and just hiding all the cash and items in her mother-in-law's wrinkles. And eventually she gets caught by the police and she just pulls a gun out from her in-law's wrinkles. It's so dumb.
No. And so, speaking of dumb, welcome to Eden Zero Volume 1, which is definitely not fairy tale. Not in the slightest. It's not fairy tale at all. It doesn't have a character who looks like Natsu Dragnail. It doesn't have a character who looks like Lucy Hartfilia. It doesn't have a blue cat called Happy. It doesn't have it doesn't have a space pirate, a one-eyed space pirate with long red hair, female as well, who, no, she's not called Urza Scarlet. She's called Elsie Crimson, which is a totally different name.
Are you sure this series isn't actually called, like, Elf Whisker?
It's like, I mean, you look at it, you go, it's fairy tale. It's just fairy tale. There's characters in here who look like they've just been taken out of fairy tale.
Yeah, it doesn't count as finishing fairy tale if you just keep writing it but change all the character names.
And put it in space and give it a sci-fi backdrop-ish. Anyway, it starts off with this girl called Rebecca who lands near the at a deserted theme park near the Granbell Kingdom, and there she finds loads of robots who are at this theme park, but there is actually one living person there, and that person is called Shiki, and he's actually the only human there.
Oh, he's a guy.
Yeah, he's a guy.
He's the girl.
No, he is a guy called Shiki, and he is basically the only guy there, the only human there, and he has been raised by these robots, which is not the same as being raised by wolves, but effectively is kind of the same as being raised by wolves. He doesn't understand humans, he's never met a human before. He's George of the Jungle, right? But it's a robotic jungle, which looks a lot more like a theme park. So anyway, he's convinced by all the other robots to leave the theme park and go out on a journey with Rebecca into the universe, and he gets into a fight with the leader of the theme park, and the leader of the theme park sends them out into the Sakura Cosmos, and there in the Sakura Cosmos they see things like dragon spaceships and various things like that, and they're basically... The robots believe that the Shiki is going to change the universe before they all effectively die. Hooray for Hiromashima and putting something in there that I was surprised he would put into a story, but they're robots, so it doesn't count. Anyway, it has, in Eden Zero, a scene where you have a dragon and it's talking to a giant robotic-type cybernetic woman who's floating in space, sitting on a giant asteroid, and I don't even know what her name is. To be honest, I don't really care. Rebecca is apparently, she's like this manga, this universe's version of a YouTuber called a BTuber, and she makes her money from videos that she puts online. Turns out Happy is actually a robot. He's actually, because the original Happy died in a car accident, and now this Happy is a robot who can turn into twin pistols, which will always do headshots. And it goes on from there. They have the usual guilds and various things like that, and everybody likes to fight, and it's just a matter of time before the fan service starts making its mark on this manga series. So, yes. One of the things that's always puzzled me is, what is with the Japanese fascination with German-type names, or Germanic names, I should say? I mean, they've got a character in here called Weiss Steiner, but it's spelled Weiss, W-E-I-S-Z.
I don't know. I guess it's just a thing they think sounds cool, I guess. Because, yeah, it is a fairly common thing in, well, across a lot of manga, people having, like, improbably Germanic names.
Yeah. And I'll say this manga volume does end on a bit of a mystery, which actually made me want to read the second volume, which I'm surprised because it's Hiro Mashima. But
is the mystery. My internet doesn't want me to speak the truth.
So, yeah, it ends on a mystery that made me want to read the final volume. The mystery, the last couple of pages are set 20,000 years later, and there are some explorers on a barren planet who find two human bodies that are really old, a man and a woman, and they find a dice with a heart on it, and there's something written on the back of the dice. And as the dice is being held up to, the scene, you know, the angle of the view changes, and on the back of the dice is written Eden Zero, but framed in that panel is a planet that's effectively been broken in half. And so that's got me asking questions. What is Eden Zero? Is it the planet, or is it something else?
Okay.
So I will give credit to the fact that it's got me intrigued. The rest of it was fairly bland. It's got me by the curiosity, though. Got me by the curiosity. I'll give it a bit more of a chance. You never know. Maybe all of that work on Fairy Tail turns into something very good with Eden Zero. I'm always happy to read good manga from authors who I didn't really rate before, because I've been proven wrong so many times.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I think on that vaguely optimistic note, we will end the show before my internet completely explodes again.
Yes. So, if you want to listen to, well, if you want to know anything about us, or listen to any of our stuff, or read any of our stuff, or watch any of our stuff, head over to our website, which is thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll also find our Patreon and our shop, where, you know, you can show your support by using those. You know how to use them. We shouldn't need to explain that to you. That's it from us for this week. We will see you all next week when Mick shall return. We will release him back into the wild. So look forward to it.
After our conservation efforts have been rewarded.
Yes. So look out for that. You know, we may invite Michaela Strachan. I don't know.
That's another old person reference, isn't it?
Yes, it is. She used to, if I remember rightly, she used to do a show called The Really Wild Show, and she's very into conservation. I could have gone with David Bellamy, but then I'd have to try and do the voice, and I'm not going to attempt that. So anyway, until next time, I've been Rob.
Andrew.
And he's been Andrew.
Fine. Spoil my fun.
If I let you have your fun, we never end the show.
That's true.
We'll see you all later.
That's how we get in these predicaments to start with.
Exactly. We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.